Ed White, Gemini 4 was launched on June the 3rd, 1965, and within a day or two, you were America's first astronaut to walk or to go outside in space. What have you been doing since then?
Well, since then, I was the backup command pilot on the Gemini 7 flight.
That was in December of 65, wasn't it?
That's right. I picked that job up shortly after I got back on Gemini 4. It takes about 6 months of preparation, and between June and December was just about a little more than 6 months. So I picked up that job and saw Gemini 7 off the pad and back down. And when I got finished with that job, I was told that I was going to be on the first Apollo flight crew. And since the first of this year, in other words, last January and February, we started our preparations for the training for the first Apollo flight.
So you've spent a year in training for this first manned Apollo mission.
Yes, we've been working on the mission for about a year now.
And what all have you been concentrating on?
Well, it's been different things. Initially, we concentrated on getting a good feeling and a good understanding of the system, so we went right back to school again. And after that, the job of checking out the spacecraft was starting out at North American, our prime contractor in Los Angeles. And we spent a great deal of time out there reviewing with the engineers the procedures for checking out the spacecraft and making sure that from an operator standpoint the spacecraft was checked out correctly. And after that we went into, and about this, really concurrently with that, we worked on developing our procedures for actually operating the spacecraft and working on our checklist. And along the same time we worked out our water egress procedures. You might have seen the films on that showing how we will get out of the spacecraft when we get onto the water and how we'll be recovered. We've taken the spacecraft now down to the Cape and we're in the preparation, the final stages of, we've run one altitude chamber test on the spacecraft. We'll be running another one and then the spacecraft will go out onto the pad and we'll start our final preparations for launch.
Now you're also quite active in your spare time, whenever you get any, as I understand it. You're also quite active in youth work. Would you tell us something about what you've done around the country?
Well, I haven't been able to. You know, when you get onto a flight crew, you're pretty well withdrawn from these activities, and I haven't had the opportunity to work as closely as I'd like to with the youth groups. I am very interested in our young people and the organizations that permit them their activities, the YMCA and the Boy Scouts and any of the youth organizations. If I have the opportunity and I make the time to participate in giving support to these organizations.
You know, I always think of you and John Glenn together in your interest in America's youth and your influence upon them. I think John is still very active, although he's not in the program now.
Well, he is still very interested in the young people. He still does a lot of work with the Scouts and a lot of work with the Freedom Foundation. You know, really, that's our most important product, let's face it, our kids and how we bring them up and their capability to be useful and constructive, productive citizens. I think if we accomplish this job, then as far as I'm concerned, whatever else we've done is secondary. If our children are raised properly and are able to create a civilized environment for us in our old age, then we've done our job properly. And I think this is probably one of the big benefits of our space program, because it permits the young people to have a definite, tangible goal. They can see the requirements for getting a good education and for keeping themselves physically fit, because they can't participate in these kind of programs unless they develop their mind so that they have a position and can contribute. So I think really our program is, this is probably one of our big points, is giving a creative environment for our children to grow up in.
Thank you, Ed White. We'll be talking to you more throughout the flight. That's just one closeout. Thank you, Ed White. Now stop it a minute, Dawn. Ed White, you're called senior pilot on this Apollo 1 mission. What does that mean, other than that you're sitting in the middle?
Well, I think this all developed from the point we all are pilots, and we all want to be called pilots of some sort. So we tried to think of some kind of nomenclature, and of course there has to be one man designated as the person who would handle the flight, who would command the flight, and he's the command pilot. And if something should happen, a structure has to be set up where the command passes right down, even among three men. And so that's probably the way we came up with the command pilot, senior pilot, and pilot. You might recognize this. This is the same way the Air Force designates its pilots according to their experience levels. The command pilot is an experienced pilot of 15 years experience with a commensurate time of flying.
Captain of the ship.
He's a senior aviator.
Mm-hmm.
And a senior pilot is the next, and the pilot is the starting level in aviators in the Air Force. So we picked command pilot, senior pilot, and pilot. And it does indicate that I'm sitting in the center couch and that my primary responsibility is in the guidance, navigation, and control area of the spacecraft. And consequently, my interests have been heavily with the computer and the inertial system that allows us to align the spacecraft and to make our maneuvers in space.
Well, what do you think of the new guidance system and the new control system in Apollo?
I'll give you a real good opinion of it after we fly. But I do think that it's a very sophisticated system, and it has a great deal of capability. We're just now starting to understand its full capability, I think, because, you know, you mature a system as you go along. You design it and build it, and then you really learn its full capability as you start utilizing the system. And this is what we're doing now. I think we have a fine, sophisticated system. I think it's fully capable of doing the job for us as we add to it. We, of course, don't have a program in our computer capable of going to the moon. But as the flights progress along, the computer program will be expanded to cover the full flight to the moon. And I'm very confident of our system. We have to find out how well we can see the stars out of the spacecraft. You know, we navigate to the moon using the stars, just like navigators did thousands of years ago. They've used the stars for years. We're going to use those same stars, and to use them, we have to be able to see them. We have a telescope, which we call it a telescope, but it has no magnification to it. It has a magnification of one. In fact, it decreases due to the optical properties. It decreases a little bit of the amount that you can see through it, so that we have a big objective to find out how well we can recognize the stars through this telescope, so that we can take a star, I'll put it in the center of our telescope, and then transfer it over to the sextant, which has a very narrow field of view. It has a field of view of 1.7 degrees, so unless we can line it up rather precisely in the telescope and define exactly which star we're looking at, we can't use our sextant and make our fine alignment of our spacecraft. We have to be able to take two stars, measure the angle between them, and then our computer knows which two stars, we tell the computer which two stars we measured, and it knows exactly where they are in space with respect to time, and it tells us where we are then.
Mm-hmm.
So this is our method of navigation.
And what amount of time is required for each of these star sightings and use of your computer before you have the answer?
Well, it's a whole sequence that we go through of aligning the spacecraft, and it could take, to do the whole sequence, a matter of 10 or 15 minutes, but if we had maybe a little difficulty with it, it could take a little longer time. So it's a procedure that you have to go through, which within the procedure, taking sightings on the stars is a part of aligning the spacecraft.
Ed is one of the men who's flown in Gemini before and will now be in the larger Apollo spacecraft. Would you compare the two and your comfort inside this as compared to Gemini?
I think you have to compare maybe one of the little small two-seat compact cars, and then you go along and compare that to one of the maybe a big limousine where you can actually sit on the floor if you want, or transfer from the front seat to the back seat.
Is that much more roomy?
It really is. It gives us the capability. We can all three get out of the seats and get down in the area where the footrests are, lower the footrests, and we can very comfortably all three of us work in this area at the same time. Or we can put two men under each of the left and the right seats for the sleep station and have one man up in any one of the three seats to watch the spacecraft while the other two sleep. or we can put a man down in what's called the lower equipment bay, is where the area that I mentioned first, where the three men can, you can push the seats, the leg pans of the seats back, and you could put a man down there, and this is where you use the sextant and the telescope to work the navigation problems out. So we really have six stations in the spacecraft. We have two sleeping stations, three seat stations, and one station down at the lower equipment bay at the navigation station.
Does this give you enough room to have a little privacy if you need it? When you're sleeping, are you out of the way of the remaining pilots, and so that you can isolate yourself?
Well, if you try to visualize the location of the seats are located right straight across the center of the spacecraft, and the two sleep stations are underneath the left and the right couch. So naturally, the man sleeping underneath the couch has no interference from the man up in the couch working in the spacecraft, and vice versa. So they are quite separate locations, and they are, if you want to say it, they are somewhat private, as a matter of fact.
Are most of your instruments and work positions then forward of these points?
Well, they're above the seats, mm-hmm. so that you, when you lay in the seats, back in the seats, the most of the operation of the spacecraft is done from this position, and the switches are all located up in this area. Not many switches are down in the lower equipment bay. Well, there are some down there associated with the navigation of the spacecraft, but down underneath the seats, there's not many switches down there. There are some, but those are ones that aren't used too frequently.
And how well can you see out? Is it comparable to Gemini?
I think we have much more capability to see out, because in our particular spacecraft, we have five windows rather than two, and it gives us a full 180 degrees or better field of view. It probably gives us close to a 360 degree field of view. If you were to use the side portholes, you have portholes on the right or the left of the spacecraft, which you can see out to a certain circumference on either side, and then you have the two docking windows that gives you the capability to looking out straight ahead, and then over the center couch is another fairly large window which gives you the capability of looking out along the curved part of the spacecraft. You almost have to see the picture of the spacecraft to visualize these five windows that are located radially around the spacecraft, but it gives us quite a capability to see out.
Thanks, Ed.
One other thing, too, is you...
Take that, all right. Throw that.
Okay, one other area, too, the part that you can't see, the windows are radially 180 degrees around, the area that you can't see out of, specifically out of the windows, the telescope looks out the other side of the spacecraft, so you effectively can look out almost any part of the spacecraft except out back through the heat shield.
Thanks, Ed. Now let's go into the suitless. Well, Ed, this flight, let me see here, my husband's better.
Should I call you Rep as we go through?
Yeah, Rep. Right. Go ahead, make it Rep, Ed, if you feel like it.
Yeah, oh, I'd be happy. Because this is the way you identify
it. Yeah.
Rep, R-E-T.
R-H-E-T-T.
R-H-E-T-T.
As in Butler.
It's like Gone with the Wind.
Uh-huh. Right out of Gone with the Wind.
Okay.
Ed, you're going to be
fine,
much
Scarlett.
More.
Well, you're going to run Joe Shea out there. This guy and his pun.
Huh? He's too much, isn't he?
It's just too much.
Do you notice his Red Sox?
Yeah. What's the suitless condition.
Let it rot.
Ed White, I think you're going to be much more comfortable inside Apollo 1 than you were inside or outside Gemini 4, aren't you?
Well, I think we will be from a standpoint of when we can actually remove our suits. You know, in Gemini 4, I had on that large suit with 22 layers on it, and it was pretty bulky, and I really wasn't too comfortable in it. But if we can determine that the environmental system is adequate in the Apollo, we plan to take our suits off after the first burn. And
I
should define
maneuver.
That, right. The first time we fire the big engine, which will change our trajectory somewhat. It'll be the first test of that engine.
When does that come?
Well, it could come if we have a little difficulty getting into orbit. We could use it to put us into orbit or to make a change right initially after we get into orbit to put us into a better orbit. So we could fire it right away. If not, it'll come late in the first day.
And what sort of apparel will you be wearing?
Well, we have a series of things that we'll have to give us a capability, if it's cold, to be comfortable, and if it's warm, to be comfortable. We have an extra pair of the same kind of underwear that everybody else has been wearing. This is a bit for sanitation, too, though. We plan to change that once during the flight. And
now, this is just typical long cotton.
That's
underwear.
Long handles with pockets in it for the electronics that take care of the sensors to monitor our physical condition. We also have a pair of constant wear flight suit, which is a two-piece flight suit designed somewhat similar to a flying suit.
Is this a nylon outer garment?
Well, I don't believe it's all nylon. I believe it has some nylon in it, but it's a space-compatible material. Outer garment, it's blue, and it's the same material as our old blue flying suits were made out of. And in addition to this, we're taking a pair of a two-piece long-handled underwear. And it's a little warmer than regular long underwear. It's almost a thermal type underwear. We'll take that along so that we can put on a top or take off a top. And we'll have a few extra pairs of socks, because we really don't know whether we're going to stabilize out particularly lower power settings in the spacecraft at low temperatures or comfortably or uncomfortably warm temperatures. So from this standpoint and the freedom standpoint, we'll be probably a lot more comfortable than we were in Gemini. During the EVA part, though, you brought out, I think that was the most comfortable part of my whole flight, temperature-wise and freedom-wise. During Gemini 4 was the time that I was out during the EVA. So I don't know whether I'll be that comfortable or not.
Well, you're indicating an opinion a bit different from some of the other fellows who've been inside this highly pressurized suit.
How
that's
do you mean?
That's not going anywhere. I'll just drop it there.
You mean of?
In other words, they're talking about how uncomfortable the pressure bladder and everything is when you pressurize, how hard it is to move around. Everybody talks about how uncomfortable and bulky the thing is. So.
Yeah, well, but out there, completely unencumbered by any weight, and also I wasn't doing some of the tough tasks that some of the later fellows tried to accomplish. I was comfortable out there. I didn't have too big a fight.
You had a
tough time with the hatch coming back in. That was a big job, trying to get it closed. But the maneuvering out there with the maneuvering unit there wasn't anything to be fighting out there. I was just floating free in space.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure you'd like to do that again, wouldn't you?
Yes, I would.
On another flight. Not on this one. You're going to stay inside on this one.
Well,
right?
They told me I had to stay in on this one.
Okay, thank you, Ed White. Halt one moment. We're about to run out of our time. Let's see if we can get this one and make it clean here somehow. Ed White,
I know what they're going to call it during a flight. They're going to call it space types. I know that already, don't you?
Space types?
Yeah, as sure as a day is long.
All right, let's see if I can try to get into it and still be clean. Well, Ed, you're going to carry out one of the interesting medical experiments on this flight, and that is wearing sort of a girdle or what we might end up calling space tights just before reentry. Explain to us what this is for and what they look like.
Well, it's really a very simple clinical device that they've used in the medical field for some years now. It's a supporting device, skin fitting and elastic from my waist all the way down to my feet, which hopefully will prevent pooling of blood in the lower extremities, which is the device that people pass out from. If the blood pools down in the lower extremities, the blood isn't permitted to get to the head and you can pass out.
Just maintains pressure on your legs and hips.
To keep the pressure of the blood high enough to keep it up in your head area. This is one of the things on Gemini 4 with the seating position in the Gemini spacecraft. They didn't know whether we would, in an upright position when we got down on the water, whether we would pass out and then not be able to regain consciousness because we'd stay upright. You have to fall down and get flat and let the blood go to your head.
Well, this is designed to see how it affects you at recovery, after reentry.
That's right. They want to see if this device used during the last 3 or 4 hours of the flight and during the reentry. And then I'll keep it on and go in and wear it during the post-flight medical testing and see if this has some effect. I don't know how I got selected for it. They told me it was because they had the most experience with my medically monitoring me from Gemini 4. they selected me for it, and they'll compare the data from this flight with the Gemini 4, and then they'll run some testing right after they complete this testing without it, after the recovery, and then they'll compare this data.
Thank you very much, Ed White.
And our time
I didn't get a chance to say your name. Yeah. You hurried me through so fast.
well, you...